Aloha, this is Louis Herman, author of Future Primal. If you want to listen back to a show, visit the conversation at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Ted Dintersmith calls himself an education philanthropist. The retired venture capitalist has traveled to all 50 states to review the ways those states run their educational systems. He's now focusing his work on two states, North Dakota and Hawaii. In advance of our panel on Hawaii education on The Conversation on Thursday, we asked Ted Dintersmith what his travels around the country had shown him.
The education model goes back over a century. It was designed in 1893, and I think the concern that I have, that I think everyone should have, is rather than reimagine education for a totally different world, we've tried to continue to refine an obsolete model. Mm-hmm. And the metaphor I use is a covered wagon. You know, we are trying to make covered wagons go fast. They're always going to go just a few miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you can do all you want to try to improve an obsolete model, and you'll get the results we've gotten nationally, or states get, which is more test prep, more drilling, more practice around these things, flat scores, you know, demoralized teachers, disengaged kids, and nobody's getting prepared for anything that matters.
Well, how deep do you have to drill down to, you know, how fundamental does the change have to be? Do you still have a classroom with a teacher up in front of the class? What's the new model?
I'd say there is not a single model. I think that's one of the things that's really important. I've got a new book coming out in April, and I shine a light on remarkable, innovative classrooms all over America. You know, I went to all 50 states in a school year. No two are alike. Just as the new economy is looking for very distinctive, creative ways for people to plug in. And so if you said in a journalism forum, what's the right way to conduct an interview? There is no right way. There are good principles and good practices.
I agree with that, yeah.
But the reason you have such a great show is you have your distinctive style. And I think that's what we need to be encouraging kids from the get-go, is to find their lane, their path forward, and become excellent at it, and have schools that support that process.
Self-confidence of the kind you described doesn't come that easily in adolescence. It's self-doubt is, yeah, more often. Is that fair to say? An accurate, you know, that's how I remember my adolescence.
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult time for kids, but I think we pile on that in school because we define this very narrow measure of success, which is largely based on standardized test scores and grades. Mm-hmm. For a whole lot of kids, that's a lousy arena to be playing in. They've got things they're great at, but they fall outside of that very narrow defined metric of success. Mm-hmm. And so we're telling those kids with unlimited potential that they're not proficient, that they're not smart, that they're not good enough. The other thing is that those capabilities that you need to excel on standardized tests actually have nothing to do with what's important in the 21st century. It's low-level procedures, it's fast processing, it's content recall. All of that's done by machine intelligence today.
Let me give you a dinosaur perspective. Is accurate English grammar important in the 21st century? Because it's going down the tube.
It's going down the tubes. And I write a lot, so I am a bit of a grammar snob.
So am I. That's why I'm asking.
And I'd say for certain, effective communications is really important. And I think when you enter the writing realm, you want to write clearly and you want to write in a way that reflects excellent practice. That I totally agree with. But when you look at how much writing kids are actually doing in schools, there was a story I read last week, study done of inner city middle schools. Only 9% of the kids in these middle schools were doing any writing in a week beyond just one paragraph. So if you don't do it, you're not going to get good at it. And I think one of the things that's really important is, do you teach great grammar by having kids memorize, you know, what a gerund means?
Yeah, I still don't know.
or do you teach great grammar by having kids do lots of writing, mm-hmm, and get a lot of feedback, not just from the teacher, but from peers. In this particular case, they highlighted a community that was pulling in outside adults who cared a lot about writing to just do editing sessions with kids to complement the feedback they get from their teacher. And that was a really good idea because there are a lot of people in communities that will volunteer to help kids. But I think the key thing is, yes, that's really important. I think it will always be important in terms of writing clearly in an effective way, not botching things in a way that we see way too often. At all levels, by the way, of our society, let's just say hypothetically from the very highest office in the land on down, you know, when you make a mangle of the English language, I think people justifiably infer from that something about the thought process behind what's being communicated.
And about your level of education.
Yeah.
You seem to be saying that there is no single standard for how, quote, educated you are. So what's your definition? What would you consider an educated, you know, 18-year-old?
Well, the standard, I think there are, so let's just stick on the communications theme for
right.
a second.
Sure.
I think there are clear standards. If you and I and several other people that care a lot about writing and grammar and the written word and the spoken word were to evaluate a set of essays and a set of talks delivered by students, we would be in pretty close agreement on what represented adequate, proficient, excellent work, mm-hmm. and what represented really a failure to have any level of mastery of those capabilities. So I think it's important not to say throw standards out the window. I think it's important to have informed standards based on evidence where you're relying on the perspective of someone who really has some level of expertise, which is often the teacher. But there are only so many hours in a school week that a teacher has. And so can you complement that with other resources? So I think those standards, to some extent, are immutable. What I take issue with is when you turn them into short-form, multiple-choice questions around often very boring reading passages that students have no interest in, where you're asking these gotcha questions, where as adults, if you actually go back, which I do this fairly often, go back and look at, for instance, the ACT or the SAT written sections just to see, I don't generally agree with a lot of what they say are the right answers. And I feel like it's shutting out any kind of creativity or independent thought or any critiquing from the student about what's really going on here. And so when you turn school from developing a powerful personal voice in your communications approach to answering dumbed-down questions and saying, oh, if those test scores go up 2% on something that I think is quite formulaic and call that success in school, you are missing the important point.
The ideal intellect, let me just posit this, is a combination of creative thinking and intellectual rigor. And I worry that an emphasis on the creative can move us away from intellectual rigor, because we are moving away from it. We have a growing distrust in society of science, of journalism, of the systems of thought based on accurate, you know, determination of what's true and what isn't.
I agree completely. They're not mutually exclusive, as you know. So
right, but
they both
the balance
need to be there.
The
because I think you can have really dry. Think of a lot of the critiques of philosophers. They're very dry with a lot of intellectual rigor.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody wants to read them. But it's where I think the role of presenting your work for a student, from a student's perspective, presenting your work to classmates, doing public exhibitions with adults coming in and observing your work, can not only be very motivating, but it can really hold kids to the challenge and the standard of clarity in their logic, because there's nothing like having to explain something to someone else, to answer questions, to determine, hey, I actually don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just superficial thinking. I need to do more. And so I think it's really important. But the odd thing is, right, that most kids never get a chance to develop that and become really proficient at it in school, because they're memorizing a bunch of stuff. They're saying it back on tests. They're parsing what's on the teacher's mind. And they don't really, believe it or not, they don't really get that opportunity on a regular basis to present something in a way that shows their own voice, that has some level of creativity in the way they present it, but is based on sound underlying logic, you know, principles that show careful thinking. And that's what we need to be doing with our kids, because if they can't do that going forward, they're going to be in a big, big heap of trouble.
So your version of what I remember as the book report of a book I hadn't read to a bunch of classmates who hadn't read it either and couldn't care less would be making a presentation on a book that everyone had read to your peers and having them evaluate your book report in that scenario?
That would be terrific. And if you can't, if you want to respect each kid's ability to pick a book they think is important, one hop over from what you just said is to prepare a presentation where you're trying to convince other kids why this was a great book.
There you go.
Be a critic and explain what you, or maybe you hated the book, and explain to your classmates and your teacher, maybe a broader forum, why this book fell short. But to do it in a way that reflects the very best principles of good critical analysis.
Ted Dittersmith is a retired venture capitalist who now calls himself an education philanthropist. He's the producer of the documentary Most Likely to Succeed and the author of the upcoming What School Could Be. Find out more on the Conversation's Facebook page.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Pacific Buddhist Academy, a college prep high school, announcing an admissions open house on January 31st. PacificBuddhistAcademy.org, Enlightened Learning.